Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect. It's approximately 3:33 p.m. on this Wednesday, February 22nd. We do have a quorum with us. The record should reflect that we have Senator Stevens here, Senator McGuire, Senator French, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Senator Paskvin. I do expect that we will likely have additional senators joining us soon. But before we get started, I need to take care of a little bit of housekeeping. At the conclusion of the last meeting, just about a half an hour ago or so, I said that the committee was in recess, and I have clarified this with Ms. Kreckelberg, and I realize I should have said that our 1:30 meeting is adjourned, and so to the extent I need to say it is adjourned and then we are now starting a new meeting, we need the record to appropriately reflect that. So I believe that that does cure the problem. So this 3:30 p.m. meeting has been officially noticed with the Senate Secretary, and for record keeping purposes we now begin the brand new meeting that was officially recorded with the Senate Secretary. So hopefully we've cured that little glitch in the procedural system. During this hearing, the Senate Resource Committee will hear from Claire Fitzpatrick. She is the Chief Financial Officer for BP Exploration Alaska, and she is joined today with Damian Bilbao. I hope I'm saying the last name accurately, but he is the Head of Finance and Development and Resources. I understand he's new to Alaska. I've met Damian here a couple of weeks ago, and before we get officially started with the presentation, I would recognize we have Senator Geisel in the audience. We have Deputy Commissioner Tangeman in the audience. I do not see anyone else that we need to identify yet. We are now being joined by Senator Co-Chair of Resources, Senator Wagner. So given that, Claire, presentation is yours, so please begin.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chairman Paskevin and Chairman Wagner and members of the committee. As Senator Paskevin indicated, my name is Claire Fitzpatrick. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for BP here in Alaska. And with me is Damian Bilbao, who's Head of Finance for our Development and Resources activities. I would like to start with appreciating both the invitation to come and talk with you here today and also the accommodation that you provided me last week, recognizing that I was out of the country. I realize that that may have met my schedule more than it did yours, so I appreciate you being willing to do that. One thing I wanted to just introduce before I sort of start on my comments is to make you aware as to why I have Damian Bilbao with me. It's not for security in numbers. It is, in fact, that I'm moving on to a new role, so I will, in fact, be leaving Alaska, and I'll actually be leaving Alaska after five wonderful years next week. And when we considered who would be the appropriate person to be taking over the role, working with you down here in Juneau, we decided Damian was probably the most appropriate person. And while he has returned to Alaska, he has worked here previously. We lent him to the Asia-Pacific region for 3 years, and then we brought him back home. But he's in the position of knowing our Alaska business as well as being an Alaskan. Therefore, we felt he was the most appropriate person who could then actually take over in this particular role. So that's the purpose of Damian being here today, is to introduce him and let him get his feet wet. We understand sort of, you know, one of the main things that the Senate is looking at, not the only thing we realize this session, is the options for improving the investment climate in Alaska. And to support this discussion, we would like to just give a couple of our positions on this particular matter. And that is recognizing that the pipeline remains two-thirds empty and production continues to decline. More investment is needed to increase production. BP does support the governor's policy of having a meaningful change in tax goals, tax policy. We also support the governor's goal of 1 million barrels, and we'd like to see lots of things done to actually see Alaska achieve that goal. Alaska has great resource potential, and much of it is within existing fields. But however, Alaska does have an investment problem. It's been pointed out by a number of people. The environment is not internationally as competitive as it could be, and therefore is not attracting the level of investment that is needed to put more oil in the pipe. The state's biggest lever for increasing production is meaningful ACEs tax change. And this is an area that the legislature is empowered to make changes in the near term. Before I actually step into the presentation to talk through a bit about BP's sort of past, what we're currently working on, and what we see as the future, I realise from the last presenter, testimony giver, I'm not sure what the technical correct term is, that there were certainly three outstanding questions which I thought I would like to address right at the start, if that's okay with the chairman. The three that
please continue.
The three that I had registered, and I may or may not have captured them correctly, and I'm sure I didn't necessarily capture them all. One was in reference to the GHX equipment and whether that was in state. The answer is no, it's in warehouses in Houston. Second was, what is the status of IPAD? We are currently doing a number of studies and works addressing four primary technical challenges, and they are around how do we address processing large quantities of solid laden viscous oil, and that's work that's primarily being looked at in the GC2 area. How do we improve the artificial lift of viscous wells? Work to remove some more subsurface uncertainties, and work focusing on how to build a well pad of the future as opposed to just building well pads as we had done in the past. So a lot of work is actually going to address those technical challenges, and that is part of the conversations that we're currently having with the DNR. I understand there was also a third question which was then associated from, is that a technical challenge or an economic challenge? These are technical challenges. The more we can resolve technical challenges, that in fact helps with economic challenges. The state does have an opportunity to help resolve those technical challenges, which are also economic, in how it deals with fiscal policy.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the big things that we've heard from BP and Conoco and others is that if we pass some sort of tax breaks, then you've committed, BP's committed to develop the IPAD project, which is a multi-billion-dollar project. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit more about some of the challenges, because what we just heard from the Director of Oil and Gas was that it's actually been in the plan of development for the past 5 years to develop the IPAD project. And when I asked him point blank, is it being held up for economic or technical reasons, he didn't hesitate. He says technical reasons. So are you disagreeing with what the director said?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. No, I'm not disagreeing. Technical challenges for me includes more than just engineering. Technical challenges can include commercial challenges as well. But I'm of the view that if I can't solve some of the engineering technical, then I'm missing an opportunity. Any project I do, I want to be able to do as efficiently and as effectively as possible. I will always seek to drive efficiencies through technology, as well as through cost, and then also through what is the fiscal environment. So it is a combination. So the Director of Oil and Gas was, the things we are focusing on IPAD that are within my control or our control is the technology things. I can hope to influence and inform fiscal change, but I don't have the power to do that.
Well, maybe let me ask it a slightly different way. Is that project being held up currently because of the ACES tax structure? And is that a project that would go forward under the governor's proposed tax structure, for instance?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. The pace at which we would progress projects would increase because we would have the ability to put more resource onto them. But there's a lot of projects that we have which we refer to as kind of a hopper of opportunities. And we keep a number of them warm, and it's like an incubator, waiting for when is the right time. And we continue to work, well, is there more we can do on technology? We're not just going to sit back and say, well, there's nothing more we can do. We just have to wait for the state. So we believe we're trying to do our side of working out how to progress them. With a better fiscal climate, there is more activity that we can ramp up, which means the pace at which things could move will increase.
What is the maximum realistic throughput from IPAD?
Senator Pascavan, my honest answer to that is I would need to find out. I would hate to make a guess to discover that I'm 2 years out of date from what the latest technical views are. So if it's, I'm happy to answer, get the answer to the question. I don't know it.
In other words, what I'm trying to, in a more general sense, understand at this time, assuming the investment is made in IPAD, is this is the intent when it comes to the resource to slow the rate of decline or to reverse and increase the rate of throughput, for example, over FY11 or FY12 throughput from BP?
Senator Pascavan, IPAD itself would not be generating volumes in this year or next year. IPAD, with any of these large developments, this involves building a new pad as well as installing new facilities. It's several years before it would be generating volumes of production. The faster we can move on some of that, then the faster those volumes come through. So it's around pace.
Yes, I understand it's not going to put volume into the pipeline this year or next year, but assuming whenever it does become operational, and again, we're making that assumption, does that operation increase throughput over FY11 or FY12 BP throughput numbers?
Senator Pascal, yes, it would be incremental production over and above whatever the production is at that point in time. So if it was coming online today, it would be in addition to what I have today.
And we have because it's a hyperbolic curve, we have decline from a mature field. Is the incremental production, will that result in a continuing decline curve, but a continuing decline curve at a smaller percentage?
Senator Pascavan, I tend to think of this in diagrams, so it would be another layer on top, so it would help stem the decline. A lot of the projects that we have as possibilities, and I know I have used this in some other statements, when I look at my long-term plan as I have it today, and I look and say, okay, purely for my position, not for the North Slope as a whole, what am I forecasting as a decline versus what could it be if I'm able to progress more of these activities, both from progressing the technology challenges, and I'm making an assumption that I can crack some of the technology challenges, then I see line of sight to be able to get that, maybe not growing, but certainly flattening off.
Is another way of saying that the incremental production continues the throughput within the parabolic curve of a mature field?
Senator Bassman, if I think I've understood your question correctly, I'm going to say yes, but I will stand corrected if someone listening to this tells me I've misunderstood the question, in which case forgive me if I have to come back and correct.
That would be well received, but just generally, thank you.
Just quite no questions, and I'll proceed. What neither of us did agree was who was pushing the button. What we would like to do today is to a little bit of context around kind of BP's track record of developing Alaska's natural resources in the past to date, talk a little bit about what we're doing at the moment to prepare for what we hope and believe is Alaska's next 50 years of oil and gas development, and to highlight some of the opportunities that remain within existing fields and the technical challenges to progressing some of them, as well as how the state can help in reducing some of those challenges.
The record should reflect that we've been joined by Senator Thomas. Welcome. So, Claire, please continue.
This is the point where technology doesn't work according to plan, but I believe there are paper copies. I'm not sure whether do members of the committee have paper copies?
We'll try that.
Prideaux Bay is where I thought I would start, probably the most logical place for me to start as BP. Prideaux is the largest field in North America, and it's still one of the top 10 in the world. We've recovered over 12 billion barrels. Development of Prideaux actually enabled the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and the existence of both the pipeline and Prideaux then enabled the development of the other fields on the North Slope, both Kuparuk and a number of other ones up there. As Prideaux is one of the top 10 fields in the world, it's not really that surprising that we've had 187 Society of Petroleum Engineers technical papers written about Prideaux Bay. I'm not a reservoir engineer, but even I have come to understand that it is an absolutely amazing subsurface set of rocks. We use it with great pride, and I think the fact that there's that much been written about it, and it still is written about it, is why it is still one of the top 10 fields. The ability to develop Prudhoe Bay the way we have has required working interest donor alignment, and that's what's been behind our ability to achieve the activity we have to date. It's also what's going to underpin our ability to achieve the activity in the future. BP is a minority owner. We operate Prudhoe Bay on behalf of ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, both of whom own sort of 35-36%, and Chevron have a small interest with somewhere between 1 and 2%. It's a mature field. It's been in production for over 35 years, and as such, the chart which is on the bottom right-hand side is sort of an indication of the changing makeup of the fluids that we're actually producing. We've gone from at the start producing mainly oil to now we still handle not far off the same volumes, but now it's mainly water. That brings with it different technical challenges.
And Ms. Fitzpatrick, if you could, there's a dotted line across the top there. What is that intended to represent?
It's purely intended to represent a visual on when you look at 1980 versus 2010, the actual volumes haven't dropped that much, but when you compare the magnitude of the green bar in 1980 to 2010, the oil has dropped significantly, even though the total volumes haven't dropped anywhere near that amount. And it's just the changing nature of what you need to be able to deal with technically in a mature field in terms of that switching change. The other thing to note is we also handle large volumes of gas, which we're recycling, and both the water and the gas we're using to re-inject to help with the pressure, which actually enables us to recover more oil, and that's part of the reasons why the recovery has been higher than originally anticipated.
And is this, in general, a depiction of the constraints from treatment facilities in the Prudhoe Bay area?
At Santa Pascal, and this isn't actually with constraints, this is what we handle. The facilities are designed to handle, it's just the different technical challenges when you're just processing oil versus when you're having to process oil and water.
Correct, but in other words, the treatment facilities have to handle cumulatively three streams, oil, gas, and water. And is this throughput decline, so to speak, a result of treatment facility constraints when you have higher WOR or higher GOR values?
Senator Pascavan, through the chair, no, it's not as a result of facility constraints. This is a result of the pressures that are involved, and we always look to maximize and optimize our ability to handle fluids to maximize the oil recovery. And we're constantly looking at opportunities to change things around. The production optimization teams on the slope are extremely competent at knowing how to actually make sure we're maximizing what we can from our facilities. Prudhoe isn't the only field that we operate in Alaska. We actually operate three other major fields, and we are a significant owner at 39% in the Conoco-operated Kuparuk field. All of the fields are mature. The main ones, obviously, we've got there, Milne Point, Endicott, and North Star. We previously had Badami. We have recently transferred operatorship of Badami to Savant as a means of allowing others to access value where they see more than we do. And then we view that as part of the natural cycle of ensuring that other people are being able to bring forward their opportunities. Like Prudhoe, we're seeing increasing challenges in handling water because these are mature fields. One of the other challenges we have with mature fields is the high cost of operating combined with declining production drives us to pursue efficiencies in how we execute activity, how we develop new technology so that we're maximizing each field's ultimate recovery to extend its useful and economic life as long as possible. To ensure that these fields produce as long as possible, not only do we need to drive the efficiency gains and new technology, a good tax policy also helps to ensure the economic life of these fields lasts as long as possible. in terms of sort of, you know, what have we done over the years, it's easy just to think we developed Prudhoe Bay and leave it at that. There's actually been a lot of development over the years. The graph up here actually just predicts the what's called the IPA, so the initial producing area. So since 1995, we have progressed many material sources of oil to help offset the decline. Investments in these fields over this time frame was made possible by a fiscal environment that supported investment at scale in the oil rate adding projects. What I would like to do is provide a bit of context around what that spend has been like over the years.
Actually, just a question.
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the historical slide, were Alaska's tax rates internationally competitive prior to the passage of PPT and ACES?
Fair to French through the chair. Yes, they were. If your question is, were they more attractive and were right at the top of the pack? The honest answer is I can't say, but there was probably a time when you were more attractive than you needed to be, and I think we've now gone the other way.
And during those years, what was the decline curve of, say, the Prudhoe Bay production area?
Senator French, through the chair, it will have been different at different years depending on when you look at it and depending on various points of when these different fields came in, and it was also impacted by the extent of well workover and drilling which we've done. So the overall decline rate I think will have varied between probably 3% and 6%, but I would have to go back and check the facts.
And just a last question, thanks, Mr. Chairman. In your view, looking forward, where is the greatest opportunity for your company and us as a state that has a deep interest in oil production? Is it in the Prudhoe Reservoir or is it outside of it?
Senator French, through the chair, I hate to sound greedy, but both. I think there's huge opportunities inside Prudhoe, in greater Prudhoe Bay. I also think there are significant opportunities in some of the other areas, whether you're looking further west, both west of Prudhoe but also outside of Prudhoe, when you're then looking into some of the heavier oils, whether we call them viscous and heavy, ultra-heavy, you get all sort of definitions around there as you move west into the Milne Point areas and then into the Kuparuk areas. So I think there's huge opportunities inside Prudhoe, but there's also a lot of opportunities inside existing fields, and I'm always hopeful that there are opportunities in areas where people are exploring and looking for new things.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And just before, you know, we're looking at this chart that shows approximately 20 years, and, you know, we've received significant information that indicates that the decline from the Central North Slope began in 1989. And I think everyone's in agreement that that's when the decline started. And my question to you is why did it start to decline in 1989, more than 20 years ago?
Senator Pascavan, through the chair, I would be making wild speculations on physics. I think that's probably a question that I would be better to actually ask a subsurface person to give you a technically correct answer rather than
a subsurface or surface person.
Most of the decline is likely to be driven by subsurface.
Senator Willekowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on a question that Senator French asked, and your response was that there are points in time at which we're not internationally competitive. And we've had a lot of discussion about who we should be competing with, who our international peers are, who we should be comparing ourselves to. So I'd be curious to hear who do you think Alaska is competing against? Who are our international competitors, number one, and then number two, feeding off of that, at what levels do you believe our tax structure is broken?
Senator Willekowski, through the chair. In respect of your first question, you know, who do I think you should be competing with? Please don't take this to be flippant. You should be competing with yourself. How much investment do you want? What sort of production rate do you want in the pipe? What sort of investment climate, whether it's exploration, mature fields, cross, and then what do you need to achieve that? Rather than, if you're doing better than country A or location B, that might be great, but if that doesn't actually get you to where you want to be, then that hasn't actually solved the problem you're trying to solve. So there isn't a magic answer. It's around what's the behavior you're trying to get? What's the outcome you're trying to get? Therefore, what are the policy you need to put in place to try and achieve that? And test, are you getting what you're after? I don't mean it to sound flippant around. There isn't, so to say you should be better than California, well, I don't know. Would that get you what you want?
I actually agree. That's probably the best answer I've heard to that question. I think that's what the lease terms require. The lease terms say you have to develop when you can make a reasonable profit or when it's reasonably economic. And you're absolutely right. They don't require us to compete with anybody else. I would agree with that completely. And so I guess a question that I would have is, what fields are not economic? What fields are not economic under ACEs that you think would be economic under a different tax structure? Or fields, projects, developments?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. When I'm looking at my business, I'm looking at the totality of the business. I'm not just looking at an incremental project. And that is, when I look at an incremental project, I'm going to look at what is the cost of that activity and what volumes does that activity bring. What that assumes is that the existing production, which is currently declining, pays for everything else. When I look at the total business, I'm not in a particularly good place. This kind of oil price, my cost structure, that isn't sustainable. So I'm looking at it firstly from that perspective. Then when I'm looking at individual projects, it is a case of what is the resource that I'm able to pull through? What are the technology challenges that I have to be able to pull them through? How much money do I need to actually embark on that? It's a lot more complicated than just an incremental project that I'm looking at. It's not just a single aspect of a field. So we look at all of this and we challenge ourselves continually, and it's around, you know, where's the best place to do some of this stuff? As we said in 2007 when ACES passed, we weren't going to stop doing things. We weren't going to suddenly pack up and leave. It's around how much more opportunity is there out there and how do we compete to get more funds to do more?
Okay. And I'm just trying to figure out, what is there a specific field or a specific project that we can look forward to having online if we were to roll back oil taxes?
Sandra Wilkowski, through the chair, I think you would start to see a change in the level of drilling activity, and I think you would start to see us be able to finalise some more of the stuff which is in our incubator. We have a hopper of activities. Is every single one of them going to move through at the same pace? No, but I'm completely confident that we will be high grading and moving the best ones forward. We already said publicly that we expect that there could be another $5 billion of investment, which we believe we would have the ability to crack the technology with the right fiscal environment and move forward. It needs the two together.
In the next 5 or 6 years, is this conventional oil development that you're referencing?
Senator Pascavan, it is conventional oil, but it's also, as you're moving into some of the viscous stuff as well, there's a number of viscous opportunities as you're getting into the slightly thicker oils. As you're aware, we currently have a heavy oil pilot. We're already going to complete that. We've got funds and approved for that for the next 2 years now. We don't have any approval beyond that. Is that another opportunity that might be out there? Yes. But until I know that I can get that to work technically and the wells to flow, that's the technology challenge I need to crack first, because that will help me make it more economic, and then I can see what more do I need to bring that through.
Is there a reasonable period in time before we should anticipate any heavy oil production?
Senator Pascavan, I know I've shared this with at least one or more of your colleagues in the legislature as opposed to this room. If I had complete success and my pilot blew me away, these wells flowed, they were sustained, I could work out how to do that economically, if I went full steam ahead, it's probably 10 years before you're going to get more than 10 MBD.
And that's 10,000 barrels a day?
Yes.
And
that's still worth going for, because it ramps up after that, but that's the kind of time frame you're looking at.
And again, just so that I'm appreciating what I'm hearing, that still keeps us within that hyperbolic curve decline. It just stems the decline rate.
Senator Pascavan, if I start layering all of those things in, I honestly would need to go back and have a look. I'm going to be flattening off. Is the totality of what I can see, is that going to get us 800, 900? No. But equally, from my perspective, if it can keep me at 600 rather than dropping to 300, that's pretty good. And I'm hopeful others can be equally successful, and that the oil flowing into TAPS is not only going to come from fields in which BP has an interest.
Well, and I think we're all in agreement that those goals that you just represented are good goals to have. So, seeing no further questions, please continue.
As I indicated, I wanted to talk a little bit about the spend profile that BP has had. BP is committed to Alaska buying and Alaska hiring. As the graph indicates, over the last 3 years, BP has spent over $7 billion, and that includes $5.6 billion with Alaska companies. That's a ratio of 75%. And while you look at the graph, you could interpret the increasing spend as indicative of activity levels, but it's also important to remember the price environment changing over those levels. So there's a good amount of inflation in those sort of 2007 and beyond years. So it's important that you don't make a natural correlation between the size of the chart and the level of activity. The level of activity is probably similar, it just costs us more to do the same activity.
Chairman.
Senator French has a question.
The chart stops at 2010. Do you have the 2011 numbers?
Senator French, through the chair, the source isn't yet available. Yes, clearly I must have them. I just don't physically have them to hand right yet. I'm sure I can get them for you.
Just ballpark?
Ballpark, it's
probably within $100 million, let's say.
I was going to say, it's probably going to be pretty similar to 2010, probably up a little bit, but not a lot. And I'd imagine the split between Alaska and non-Alaskan is pretty similar. We are consciously trying to be, we expect everyone to be competitive, but if Alaskan companies can be competitive, we have a bias.
I'll put it in at 2.2, and you can send me information as soon as you know better. Thank you.
I'm well aware that it's February and my books have closed. I ought to have that number, but
I haven't done my taxes yet either.
You know, I guess it's a good question in the sense that, you know, when the U.S. and the world's economic system collapsed in 2008, and I think it was in March of 2009 that, for example, the Dow Jones and the S&P indexes hit, you know, like 10-year lows or something. It was approximately in March of 2009. How did your numbers, and I believe also as part of that, the price of oil collapsed somewhat consistent with the markets overall. How much is your spending correlative with that phenomenon?
Senator Pascavan, given the role I have, there are days I wished it correlated considerably more directly. The nature of the oil industry, we make commitments for buying things well in advance. Our ability to say, oh, no, oil price has changed, and actually stop things is actually relatively limited. So the actual impact that had on us was not so much on our spend. We did our best and worked very actively with all of our Alaskan contractors, and they responded very responsibly on, wait a minute, we're in this together in a $40 world. This cost structure just doesn't work. So there was a conscious effort to try and manage it much more actively. But for the stuff which we already had underway, contracts which were in place, we have a limited degree of maneuverability to short-term prices. And from memory, within that time frame, we went from about $40 to $120 in about 6 months.
Senator Workowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've seen statements and had some testimony from Conoco that they've said Alaska has strong cash margins, very good rates of return. They made $10 billion in profits since we passed ACES. Have you seen similar experience with BP?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. Over the years, what I have seen is my cash flow deteriorate significantly, and I pay contractors and employees with cash, not profit.
Rate of return been pretty good. Profit's been good.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, are my profits where I think they should be? No.
$2 billion last year, roughly?
Honest answer, I can't remember. And if you're going to, and I know you probably have looked at the 20F, which will have the BPXA Inc. numbers in it, which also does explain that that includes information or data that's to do with locations that are not in Alaska. And as you know, we don't publish our Alaska numbers separately.
The BP Royalty Trust, is that a document that looks at the returns at Prudhoe Bay?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the BP Royalty Trust files a 10K, as it is a debt-registered entity, and it looks purely at the element of the IPA which is subject to the Royalty Trust.
Do you have any idea what kind of returns they've gotten in the last 5 or 10 years?
I'm almost embarrassed to say to Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, no, I do not. I would need to go and look.
I happen to have those. So it's, you know, there's, because the BP Royalty Trust is a publicly traded company, it files documents, is that correct? And what it indicates is that over the last 10 years that the total return has been about 2,248%, and that's on top of a 600-plus percent capital gains. What does that indicate about the financial strength of Prudhoe Bay over the last 10 years?
Senator Pascovan, through the chair, you're going to have to forgive me when I say I will go home and get out the 10K and brush up my knowledge on exactly how the trust accounting works as distinct from company accounting. I'm not about to hazard a guess on explaining the difference between the two, but the Prudhoe Bay Trust is not a true representation of the BP business in Alaska.
It would be interesting. What they're saying is that over the last 10 years, a $5,000 investment in the BP Royalty Trust is $117,000 today, you know, given even the world's economic collapse and everything. It seems to be rather remarkable.
Senator Baskin, the Royalty Trust is tied to, it's a royalty on the oil, therefore it is linked to oil price as opposed to world economics. But with that piece of financial advice, I'm also going to be making a phone call to change my investments. But I will follow up in terms of your specific question on how that relates.
And then one of the other documents was a 2004 BP document where it indicated in part, and this is what the quote is, it says, quote, Alaska's role in BP's portfolio is to provide a stable production base and cash flow to fuel growth elsewhere.
Senator Passman, which year was this from?
2004. Is that true?
Senator Pascovan, I can safely say that Alaska has an important role in BP. It does not provide a significant amount of cash flow versus what was produced in 2004. And that's in part, production volumes are very different, cost structures are very different, and tax structures are very different. But BP's group strategy involves the two key tenets in BP's group strategy, which is around enhancing and maximizing recovery of oil from giant oil fields and gas value chains. Alaska plays prominently in both of those two areas. BP Alaska has about, I think we're the third largest resource base in the BP portfolio. So BP wants to work out how to maximize that for the benefit of the state as well as the benefit of BP. So it is still hugely important. Is Alaska viewed as a large cash generator within the BP portfolio? No.
I guess getting back to 2004, was that statement true in 2004?
Senator Pascovan, I have no, I don't the document in front of me, I have no doubt the statement would have been true. I couldn't tell you what our cash was in 2004, but I know that we were generating a lot more in 2004 than we are now.
Representative Wilkowski.
Thank you. Do you have any idea what your profit per barrel is here in Alaska?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. I don't tend to look at it on a profit basis. My cash break-even basis is pretty high.
Cash break-even meaning the cost of?
How much money I would have to make before I could afford to kind of, you know, pay the next new employee. That's getting way up north of, I can't remember, I honestly can't remember what the current prices are, but we're into the 70s, 80s.
Please continue.
One thing I was going to point out in terms of on this graph here of the spend, this is spend with third parties. This doesn't include any of the costs associated with our 2,126 employees. Also wanted to point out, because I mentioned this, was, you know, we have a strong view around Alaska Buy, but also Alaska Hire. Over the past 5 years, BP has provided internships for 54 University of Alaska students, extended full-time offers to more than 100 UA graduates, and over the last 10 years, we've hired 275 students from the University of Alaska process tech programs in Fairbanks, Kenai, and Anchorage. While our spend has increased from 2005, a lot of that actually hasn't been on activities that put barrels in the pipe, as opposed to activities which are setting us up for the next 50 years, as well as the impact on inflation. Senator Pascavan, you mentioned sort of, you know, world change in sort of markets in the 2008 time. There was a fundamental shift, and that's also resulted in a fundamental shift in price environment. Certainly, I know from my own experience, our view of long-term price in the 2003-2005 time is very different to our long-term view of price now, and that's reflective in many other companies, organizations. You will all be able to read the same publications I do. But one thing that is very apparent to me is when I look at the outer years in Alaska, if I was attracting the amount of investment that I think I ought to be, that you think I ought to be, the amount of investments in rate adding, i.e. stuff that's going to put barrels in the pipe, should be higher. When I compare that to the rest of the US, whether it's North Dakota or Texas, they're seeing record levels of activity as oil prices come up. But yet we continue the decline.
Senator Wilkowski.
I'm just curious why, so from 2002 to 2006, the price of oil went from, I believe, around $20 to $60 or $70 at record highs. I think the previous record was around $35. And yet your Alaska investments appear to have declined. Am I reading that correct?
The actual rate of spend has declined. Some of that will also be dependent on what was the rig rates we had locked in. There's a lot of other factors will go into it. The level of activity has remained fairly flat.
Senator French.
I guess I need a little more of an explanation of what this represents. We saw the total spend on the previous slide, and as Senator Wilkowski just was asking, from 02 to 06, you know, you went up, looks like about 50% from 1 to 1.5 billion. So what do these bars represent?
Senator French, through the chair, there's two things. On the prior chart, the numbers there were gross. So as an operator, obviously, if I'm contracting for third-party services for Prudhoe Bay, that's representing the 100% of the dollars as opposed to my 26% share. On this chart, we're looking at the BP net share, and it's not total spend. This is of the BP net share, how much of the BP net is being spent on activities that put barrels in the pipe, as opposed to activities which are around, whether it's maintenance, infrastructure, etc.
So this is when you say barrels that, you know, spends the money that puts barrel in the pipe, how do you tell that from a barrel from a dollar that's spent, say, maintaining a vessel? Does a dollar spent maintaining a vessel put oil in the pipe?
We don't capture it that way. We capture it separately. So if we're doing, whether it's infrastructure, capacity, upgrades, all that sort of stuff, we don't capture that as what we call rate adding, and that's basically stuff that's directly generating volume. So that's your well work, your drilling, that sort of activity is what we refer to as the kind of directly putting barrels in the pipe. Without the other activities, you wouldn't have the entire infrastructure or pipe to put it in. So
horrible things happen if you don't maintain your separators and other pieces of critical infrastructure. You have to spend it.
You have to spend it. The same as you have to do the camps, the roads, ice, snow removal, all the rest of it.
So this is sort of an internal BP accounting category.
It's actually quite an industry standard category, mm-hmm. so out of French, where people will talk about what are you spending on well work, workovers, direct activity associated with that as distinct from facilities, infrastructure, logistics.
Okay, that's interesting, but it is, I guess, surprising that despite a tripling of the price of a barrel of oil, I guess I'll go back to Senator Wilikowski's question then. Oil prices tripled from 02 to, pick a place, 06. Oil prices are tripling, and you're reducing the amount of money that you spend producing more oil in Alaska. I think it goes back to the document that Senator Paskin read to you. You were sending your cash, you know, you're making lots of money in Alaska, and you're sending it somewhere else in the world to invest it there. And that may make economic sense for you and your company, but it doesn't help this state produce more oil or employ more people.
Senator French, through the chair. 2004, I'm not doubting the slightest what Senator Pascavan read out. What I am concerned about for me here today is how do I get more money being spent on more activities to progress more oil today and tomorrow and the year after, versus what may or may not have been any business drivers in 2004.
But the problem I think we're all struggling with is that we have this history of seeing BP take its money elsewhere and invest it elsewhere. And that's our concern. That's my concern, and I think it's shared in this committee. How do we make sure that if we go back to tax terms that are internationally competitive, that produce large amounts of cash for your company, how do we make sure it gets spent here in Alaska? That's what we want to see. How do we make sure?
Senator French, through the chair, I understand your question and your sentiment. 2002-2003, we didn't see line of sight to some of the technology things that we're already implementing, so heavy oil wasn't something that people would have been thinking about at that point in time because there wasn't the technology for it. Some of the viscous oil stuff that we're going to go on and talk about, people weren't thinking about that. So the resource base that we see now, that we now are wanting to progress, I said it's kind of the third largest in our portfolio, that wasn't how Alaska was viewed at that point in time. Its strategic place, I think, has changed. That plus, you know, we do see about $5 billion worth of activity, and a lot of people here want to see those projects move as much as you do.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski, well, you.
Yeah, I mean, Senator French, I think it's really hit on the key question here, and we all want to see more production, we all want to see more on the pipeline, but we've got a 30-year history of low taxes. 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, tax rates were declining because of ELF. 2006, you had 15 out of 19 fields on the North Slope paying zero taxes. You had record high oil prices tripling within 4 or 5 years, and your investment was declining. So, you know, we had a 12.5% gross tax rate at Prudhoe Bay. So how do, I mean, we put yourself in our shoes. We need to, as those who are designated to make sure we get the maximum benefit for our resource, we've got to make sure that if we push across billions and billions of dollars to you, we want something in return, for sure. And we had a system like this just a few years ago, and it didn't work. We had for decades, it didn't work. So what's changed?
Senator Wilikowski, who's the chair, you're going that you had that for decades. There was a lot of activity in those decades. There was a lot of fields brought online over and above the IPA. We have a view of the resource base now, which technology has enabled us to have, that we didn't have in the early 2000s. Therefore, we're actually probably more now viewing Alaska the way we would have done in the beginning. There's a huge opportunity here. Why would we not want to get after it? If at the point in time, kind of 2004, we didn't see that same resource base, our view and our strategy is totally different. But I understand your sentiment.
Please continue.
This is a chart I'm sure you will have seen, and it's just continuing the theme in terms of the shift in oil markets, impact on production, what's happened with Lower 48 relative to Alaska. Recognizing Alaska is a long way from the market, it has different challenges. Costs are higher here. Neither you nor we can move where the oil is. Therefore, it's what else can we do to try and make it competitive and actually be able to get more investment and get more oil into the pipe. When we compare the various sort of taxes across the different jurisdictions, when we're looking at royalty or federal income tax, property tax, they all tend to be similar across all of the different states. The marked difference is actually the production tax rates, and that's what actually differentiates.
Is this a barrel of oil equivalent, or what is that?
Yes.
You know, so in 2006, you have the shale gas explosion in the lower 48. So I assume, you know, starting in 2006, we get to 2008, and if it's on a barrel of oil equivalent basis, you would expect to see on a graph an explosion of onshore production, because that's what happened both with shale gas, and now you're seeing in the Eagle Ford in Texas and the Bakken in North Dakota, you know, the shale oil production. So is that a barrel of oil equivalence that depicts the shale resource extraction? In other words, I want to make sure we're apples to apples and not apples to something else.
And Senator Pascavan, this may be an error on my part, but I will say what I'm thinking. The fact that it's labeled MBD would make me think it is oil as opposed to oil equivalent, but absolutely it's a valid challenge for me to look at it. There's a lot more going on, though, within also kind of the US around sort of driving the efficiencies and how else to make things competitive to get more things as well as the price. But even in the oil, we're seeing increasing amounts of oil. Stuff that was along the shale gas, there's actually a lot of shale oil stuff going on as well. So there's the activity is going up.
And I agree that, you know, the Eagle Ford is producing a lot of shale oil. The Bakken is all shale oil. You know, we have Marcellus is essentially almost all shale oil. And so, you know, I want to make sure that it's not, it may be an apples to oranges analysis. Is that a fair statement?
Senator Baskerman, I understand the question, and let me confirm it, because it wasn't the intent to have apples and oranges, but you always have to double-check exactly how you've pulled something from, in this case, the EIA's data set. But certainly, kind of, with the shale, as you said, there's a lot of shale oil, particularly with the current gas prices in Lower 48. People will give the gas away in order to extract the oil. But it's more for me, it's the, what do we do to get Alaska on that same curve as we're seeing in the Lower 48? And one of the things we can do is, do we make a more competitive fiscal environment to actually achieve a curve that's matching or closer to that, even if it's lagging behind, it's changing the trend that we're currently on. And from our perspective, we have a lot that we can and are doing in the world of technology. There's a lot we can and are doing in trying to drive efficiency. We will continue to do that. There's one thing the state can choose to do if it wants to set a policy to drive an outcome of more oil and more investment.
I guess another way of looking at that chart is to say that we hope that the unconventional oil extraction process will soon, whether it's BP's heavy oil as an unconventional oil or the shale oil as an unconventional oil, we hope for either or both of those applications in Alaska so we can arrest the decline curve.
Senator Pascavan, I think you should also be hoping for more continued conventional light oil, because there's an awful lot of that you don't want to be leaving either. I think I said earlier, the risk of sounding greedy. You want it all. So that's just sort of, you know, a little bit of history on kind of, you know, there's been a lot of activity, a lot of spend. Alaska's not where we think it could be. I don't think you think that either. Meaningful tax change, we believe, is something which will make a significant difference to starting to turn that trend the other way. What we wanted to do is go through a little bit then on what are we kind of looking at now? What are we actually working on now?
Senator Wilkowski has a question.
How would you define meaningful change?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. I would describe it as some of the key elements which were or are, I think, in House Bill 110, and that's around progressivity, introduction of, so lowering that rate of progressivity. The introduction of brackets makes a significant difference in terms of actually being able to understand it, administer it, plan for it. It's actually a much fairer mechanism whereby incremental profits are taxed at a higher rate as opposed to the current structure where as soon as you go up a dollar, it goes right the way back to the start. That's a huge thing that actually creates the uncompetitive aspect. We always did say the base rate we think is too high. A lowering of that would also be another significant difference. That's one of the things that not only our company, any new entrant looks at before you even get into progressivity. What's the base rate? What does that compare to other places? It's one of many elements. There's a number of other aspects which aren't meaningful in the pure financial sense, but administratively can make a big difference around how some of the regulations are worked. Joint interest billings, interest rates, statute of limitations. But if you're looking kind of my definition of meaningful, it's around progressivity, rate and bracketing, and base rate.
Record should reflect we've been joined by Senator Egan. Welcome. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, rather than me talking the whole way through, given Damien is taking over, it seemed appropriate that if I talked about the past, he then took you through the present and the future. So at this point, I will hand over to Damien.
Afternoon. So as Claire said, she has walked us through the tremendous amount of activity that has BP, along with its working interest centers, has brought us to where we are today. Thousands of employees and contractors doing a great job to manage one of the world's largest, most complicated fields. So what I'd like to share a little bit today is a little bit of what they're doing in 2012, focusing on a couple specific technology items. As Claire mentioned at the beginning, it's the combination of efficiencies, technology, and the right fiscal environment that allows us ultimately to progress. We bring in different feedback to the room. That allows some of these projects to move forward. So with that, didn't intend to walk through each of the items on the slide, but certainly these don't encompass the full list of everything that BP has focused on in 2012. But they do give you a sense that 2012, like 2011 and the years before, is going to be quite a busy year, another busy year on the North Slope. And that's effectively or roughly on average about 6,000 employees and contractors, men and women working every day to make sure that these activities are moving forward. 2012 will include a significant level of activity, some would say a record level of activity and turnarounds. We have a new North Star Operating Center that's been installed, significant progress in safety systems. And then fundamentally, there's quite a bit of work around sustaining our reserves to production efforts like we do every year, with roughly 5 rigs moving forward. There's a couple of these that I'm going to touch on in a little bit more detail, which touch on some of the technology aspects. As Claire shared, Prudhoe has always been a great training ground for our technical staff, and it continues to be just that. And it's that technology that's allowed us today to look back and see a total recovery from Prudhoe that's much higher than was originally anticipated. It's not just the efficiencies and the great work of staff, but ultimately it's the technology we've been able to leverage. One example of that that we are continuing to increase our use of is the Brightwater technology. And Brightwater, as you can find in the BP in Alaska brochure, it's a technology that was proven and developed in Alaska. It's a significant enhanced oil recovery technique that we will be doubling our application from 2011. It's just another example of how BP is leveraging technology to make sure we're continuously getting more oil from existing reservoirs. Another example in 2012 is a new seismic acquisition plan at Milne Point. I'd like to share some of the details about that. It's another great example of how we continue to mature opportunities by leveraging technology that allow us to ultimately extract additional production from some of these, what some consider would be very mature fields. So the Milne Point seismic, or more appropriately named the Simpson Lagoon seismic program, has been proposed by BP, and we've been in conversations with the state as well as some of the local communities with the North Slope Borough. The seismic program is a good example of how we're continuing to progress certain opportunities to make sure that they're positioned and move forward at the appropriate time. So the seismic program in particular would help to identify some additional infield drilling opportunities at Milne Point, potentially some expansion of existing pads, as well as to identify leveraging some development of certain reservoirs in a way that a different way than we've done in the past. And each of those would bring with it significant increase in activity as well as resource progression opportunities.
If I could just interject, you know, you use the term very mature field, and while I think that, you know, my perception is that we have a mature field, but then I've also heard that we have, for example, in some of the fields, it's a 4-to-1 water to oil ratio. I think they call it an 80% water cut, and they say that's there's a lot of life left in a field with an 80% water cut rate. So I guess I'm questioning you as to your term very mature as compared to just simply mature, and I don't know whether I'm splitting hairs or not.
Mr. Chairman, I probably don't want to engage into what exactly is defined as old or mature. Bottom line is some of these fields have been pretty well developed. The key point, and Claire touched on this early on, is there continues to be significant opportunity at these, even though we've moved past the initial stages of development. As we'll talk here about a little bit more in a little bit, even within Prudhoe Bay, there continues to be some significant opportunities, and we'll touch on those in more detail in a second.
Sure. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, at some point, I'd be very curious to hear if your thoughts on gas to liquids. And I know this is something that a number of the people on this committee and in the building have been very interested in. There's a potential you can turn, we've got huge amounts of gas, and you can turn that into synthetic ultra-clean oil, sells it at 30% premium. I know BP has expressed some interest in it. With the ratio you have between gas and oil, and that ratio I think expected to stay for a while. At some point, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's not something I'm prepared to talk about today. I'm sure I'm prepared to go back and get some additional information. I'm sure we can talk about it another date. I do remember conversations from as far back as time I spent at ARCO around GTLs, and I know it's been an ongoing topic of conversation for many years. I'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
So the Milne Point seismic is just one example of where we're working to identify additional opportunities. That said, I'd like to turn our attention a little bit more to looking towards the future and how some of the new technologies are being enabled in fields that are already producing. I think it's important to note, and Claire touched on this earlier, that it is great to see new companies exploring on the North Slope. and working to overcome the obstacles of bringing those barrels into production. It's also important to keep in mind that many of the remaining large-scale opportunities are found within areas that are already producing, and I'd like to talk about one of those with you in a little bit more detail. If you could look at the next slide, it's a bit complicated, so I'll walk through as to specific points, but this summarizes the Sag River reservoir opportunity in the west side of Prudhoe. And this is an area where BP is working to understand some light oil opportunities. So I know we've spoken in the past about certain viscous or heavy oil options. We thought it was important to highlight there are still some material light oil opportunities. As you can see from the graph, ultimately in a success case, you're talking about over a full-scale development of over 180 wells and over 150 million barrels of resource. What makes this particularly challenging, and as you look at the graph, you'll see the Sag River is a reservoir that we have over 275 wells producing today. If you look at the graph, there's five purple lines. Those represent five proposed pilot locations that BP and our working interest owners are progressing in 2012. Those are long extended reach wells, over a mile and a half each. And effectively, the way they would work is they would extend through a reservoir that's no more than 20 feet thick for a mile and a half. What makes it particularly complex is it's a heavily faulted reservoir. So you may be going a mile into this reservoir and it's faulted out, and you may find yourself crossing through a faulted outside of the reservoir, having to work your way back in. So if we can make it work, and there are certain significant technological challenges, it would allow you to increase your ultimate recoverable from a lower number of well bores. It's an exciting opportunity that the folks back in the office have been working very hard, and we're eager to see the results of the pilot program this year. We've just completed our first pilot well. It's reached a total depth of 6,700 feet, and I know the folks back at the office are quite eager to learn more from that first well.
Possibly now would be, we're talking about the work that you're doing here, where you're showing capital investment numbers potentially on this chart, and certainly we expect that there's operational expenses that go with that as well. If you could explain to the public how the state shares or participates in those operating expenditures and capital expenditures in 2012, if you could just walk us through that.
Senator Pascoe, is your question how the cost or investment in that would break down?
No. In other words, I guess getting directly to the point, in your integrated operation on the Central North Slope, you can deduct those operating expenditures and deduct the qualified capital expenditures in 2012 for Sag River, even if it's on your operations elsewhere in the Central North Slope, correct?
So yes. So Mr. Chairman, effectively for the folks at home, the way that the tax functions is the taxable base would be reduced by the amount of those expenditures. So much in the way that when we do our personal income taxes, there are certain deductions that we can take that reduces the taxable basis from which our tax rate determines what our payment is each year. As when we invest in a project like this one or another, that investment, that spend to help progress a resource opportunity, we do receive a benefit of reducing the taxable basis that determines our ultimate liability. That's correct.
So it's not just your operating expenditures that you deduct. It's if you invest $1 billion in capital expenditures, you can deduct for purposes of the production tax 100% of those qualified capital expenditures, correct?
Mr. Chairman, to the best of my knowledge, that is correct. I'm not a tax expert, but I'm sure that if I'm mistaken, he'll correct me as soon as this is over and remind me of what I've forgotten.
And Claire, you can certainly kick him in the shins or say it on the record. And in addition to deducting 100% of those qualified capital expenditures, then there is a 20% credit of that same dollar that goes to the bottom line as a credit.
Senator Pasquin, that's correct. And ultimately, I think it is worthwhile clarifying that you made a comment about the $1 billion. Fundamentally, when we would sit back and look at the investment decision beyond the pilot program, we would look at more than just the initial spend and the tax consequences of that. We would look at the full 20, 30-year investment profile and look at the holistic financial impact of that decision, not just the initial tax impact. But yes, you are correct. As to the tax effect of that investment, there is a deduction in the taxable base as well as a tax credit.
And we've heard information, I think it was potentially part of the joint Senate Resources and Finance meeting, where that is, in fact, one of the significant benefits that Alaska provides that is not provided in other jurisdictions, that because the state is, so to speak, participating in the forward funding, that significantly increases your net present value of the project. Is that accurate?
Senator Pasquin.
In other words, we front end load, the state front end loads a lot of those costs.
In terms of sort of, you know, an investment cycle, if we make the initial investment, so the capital investment, then you are correct. Because of the across the field, we are able to then take that into account when calculating our taxable value. When we're looking at a project, I'm looking at what happens in year one, and then I'm looking at, okay, what is the production profile that comes with that may last X years, 10, 20? What is the revenue stream that comes with that? What's the cost that goes with that? And then what's the tax that goes with that? And then what's the net cash associated with that?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly for the longer life projects, NPV is one measure that I'm looking at, but I'm also looking at what's the total cash that's going to be generated from that upfront investment, but I'm also taking into account the benefits associated with any capital deductions upfront. But it's the total project that I'm looking at, not just what happens in the first couple of years of investment.
We provide a front-end help to industry. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is, in the same way most net taxes work in, not most, all net taxes in the oil industry around the world work in the same way.
Please continue.
Just to conclude on this, there are significant drilling and subsurface challenges that remain ahead of any at-scale development. For NSAC, going back to your question, Senator Pasquin, the area where the state can make a significant impact is while the state is affording a benefit on the front end, when we look at the any project economics, it's the long-term revenue and the cash flow that result from that. And that's where under ACES, the long-term discounted cash flow is severely impacted, and particularly in a high-price environment. So a project like SAG, when we are looking at the full 10, 20, 30 years, the impact on the long-term production benefit or the revenue benefit is significantly impacting the full economics. And that's just one aspect of what we'll look at when we look at the project and how it moves forward.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just to be, you know, it's been, I believe, stated by the bipartisan working group that we are intending upon looking at the issue of progressivity. And when you use the term high price, I think I've also said, well, that's certainly the subject of both economic and political discussion, and how do you balance the that conclusion in the context of where do you then define high price? And so just, I guess, putting that on the table, I think that, you know, we're having this difficult task of defining high price in the context of balancing certain very favorable aspects of the system with other aspects of the system that I think can distort your long-term project economics. So anyway, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair. And anything you can get back to the committee on this, I mean, I recognize that there's a proprietary challenge with revealing your plans of development out in a public forum like this. I do. But I think what you can sense, just to sort of bring you into the fold of what's happening, you know, here in the halls of the Senate, there is still considerable you know, questions of veracity that I think certain members have about whether or not the industry intends to develop more as a result of reducing that progressivity rate. And you can hear the line of questions coming in different forms at you. And on the one hand, obviously, as a company, you rightfully reserve the right in a democracy to not reveal every aspect of that. And at the same time, I think what you're hearing is that any information that you can give the committee and members who are in that question of doubting about project economics and what a change to the progressivity rate at certain prices would mean to Alaska in the future, I think would be very helpful. I can't emphasize that enough. So whether you're looking at SAG or whether you're looking at Milne Point or other places, if you can kind of take us into the boardroom to a certain extent without us being there, you know, how is it that BP Alaska is, you know, presenting the fiscal climate in Alaska to your colleagues globally? And I understand you have a board of directors that decide, you know, where they're going to place this capital. Many of you in the industry have said to us that in a high-priced oil environment, there's more capital. So certainly there's more discussion about investment opportunities. And, you know, when you're looking around at your global assets for BP, you have lots of choices. So how is it that you present those project economics, and what kind of a difference would it make in terms of that progressivity rate? And, you know, highlighting at certain prices, at, you know, $62 and $68 a barrel, you've got something that's right on the fence for project economics, but reducing down that progressivity rate so that you're not, as you said, coming back and recapturing starting at the beginning from that dollar, you know, walk us through that. So I thank you for being here today, and we're going to continue on another 10 minutes. It's excellent to see the slides and the update, but I think you can sort of sense that, you know, it's incumbent on the industry to really prove it up for the folks that are doubting why this change is important in fiscal policy and why it will benefit Alaska as a whole, not just the corporations that are coming here, but the Alaskans that will get those new jobs, that will get those higher paying jobs, the money that will be circulating in the private sector as a result of these changes. And so I just throw that out there. Anything you want to follow up with the committee about specific projects or examples, hypotheticals that you could give the committee, it would be great.
Senator Wagner.
We will see what we can do within the bounds of, for proprietary reasons and antitrust reasons, we don't share.
Give us a feeling, you know, things. I mean, as best you can, give us a feeling, you know, when anybody, any interest group that comes to us, whether it's to increase penalties in sex trafficking or something, they give us, as best they can, a feeling for why this is important. Why should we take the time to go back and address this policy? Some of us understand it. Some of us believe that there's a need for that. Others don't. And so, you know, we're down to crunch time here. And if that policy is going to be pushed over the edge, you've got to convince these members of the Senate who represent Alaskans out there that have real concerns about whether or not these dollars are going to then be reinvested into the economy. And I just leave that thought with you, that you can hear the line of questioning here.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Senator Wagner.
I had two thoughts while listening to a lot of this thing. In the first place, nobody has talked to us about the fact that, you know, we want all the money you make here spent here. Well, that's kind of an unreasonable expectation, I think. But nobody's talked about the fact from 1968, when oil was discovered, until 1977, the first date of production, that the oil companies spent billions and billions and billions of dollars without putting a shackle in their pocket. And so I understand that part of the equation. But I want to go back to chart on number page 8. And you made a statement. You said it would something about it would be nice if Alaska's would look like the U.S. onshore. Is there any chance we could, at this time, even come close to getting there just with what's in Prudhoe Bay and not without getting technology to allow us to really produce at a high level the viscous and heavy oils as well as additional discoveries? In other words, we are not going to get there just from increasing production in Prudhoe Bay, are we?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, I think there's a number of factors there. Status quo is not going to get us there. And when I said, you know, getting the trend, I'm confident you understood it's around sort of the shape of the line as opposed to us getting to the numbers on the left-hand side. There's a lot still, I think, to be done within the conventional light oil of Prudhoe Bay, but if we're really looking at that kind of dramatic, I think there's going to be more than that. There is things like the SAG pilots and then the viscous, which Damien's just taken us through, that would all be contributing to turning that curve. So there's more. I don't want to discount what is still in the more traditional, but I think it's to really get that shape, okay, you need both.
We have approximately 5 minutes, so we don't want to cut Claire or Damien short. So if we were you done with slide 13?
Yes. Okay. Hey, moving on, we'll touch on this briefly, because I think Claire's actually talked about this quite a bit, but it merits another mention. And that is, within the BP Global Strategy and delivering value, there's two fundamental planks around giant fields and gas value chain. And those are two areas where Alaska plays prominently. Alaska, as Claire said, is BP's third largest resource base. We regularly get questions about what we can do to progress more of those barrels and make turn those into product, those barrels that you see on that pie chart into production. And finally, we get back to a three-part equation that Claire shared with you, and that's around the efficiency and the technology, which are aspects that we're accountable for, that we are continuously working for ways to manage. And I think our folks, both on the slope and in town, have done a tremendous job of making progress. And the last one is around the fiscal environment. So when we talk about production increases in the lower 48, whether it's oil or gas, fundamentally, it's a similar equation. It's technology that enabled that to happen. It's the efficiency of the operations, and it was a fiscal environment that facilitated that growth and that level of investment. And it's the same thing in Alaska. So the industry can drive the first two, but fundamentally, it's the state that's empowered to affect the third part of that equation, and that a change in that part of the equation can help reduce the overall technical challenge to move some of those big projects forward. But at the end of the day, and I take Senator McGuire's point on this, it's going to have to come down to a balance of trust around how some of this conversation moves forward. And until that matures and progresses and we work together to do it, it's frankly just not going to happen. So it's forums like this that where we need to continue to have a dialogue to make sure that we're answering your questions accurately and giving you the information you need to the best of our ability to help you support those conversations, and we're fully prepared to do so.
Is this 6.5 billion barrel of oil equivalents, is that in the central North Slope region, or is, in other words, does
that is
what are the boundaries or the fence around which that number is derived?
Senator Pascavan, that is BP Net's resource position in Alaska, broken down by resource type or maturity, so the proved resources versus the opportunities that we have in light and viscous oil, heavy oil, to which I think you've referred to internally as ultra heavy oil or extra heavy oil, and then gas as well. Claire, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, Senator Pascal, it's not, and depending on how you're defining central North Slope, it's all of our interests in the North Slope, so that includes anything from our interests in Kuparuk right the way across the North Slope.
It is central North Slope. It's not including ANWR, NPRA, Outer Continental Shelf, no federal resources or...
Senator Pascavan, this purely represents BP's interest. We don't have things that are in the Outer Continental Shelf, or at least not yet. One always lives in hope.
Okay, moving on. to bring this to a close, in summary, I think we've done a good job of walking through the tremendous amount of effort that and investment, as I know Ragnar pointed out, that's taken place in the past to bring us to where we're at. And that strong past is a basis for building a strong future. Producers are working to understand and address challenges for new opportunities, and the state can help here. BP will continue to implement efficiencies and develop new technologies to further increase total recovery in existing fields. Only the state can create a competitive tax environment that attracts investment, whether in exploration leases or within producing units. BP has always appreciated the strong working relationship that we have had with the Alaska government, as well as the local communities. We are deeply committed to another 50 years in Alaska under the right business climate, and look forward to working with the state to create that future. Thank you very much.
You know, one of the, you know, many Alaskans have heard the promise of $5 billion in investment, and many are questioning or concerned with the connection between investment and production. So I guess putting the question on the table, assuming the $5 billion investment in the next 3 to 5 years, as I understand, above, you know, what the current CapEx is, so assuming that $5 billion promise is kept, what increases, if any, above the FY11 or FY12 throughput does industry promise?
Senator Pasgavan, if you're saying, if the assumption is that the full year 11-12 is going to stay static, and then what would be higher than that? So if the question is it going to be growth beyond what we currently have when it's delivered in X years' time? And the answer is no, because the underlying decline is going to continue. So will it be on top of whatever the underlying decline is at that point? Yes. But it's not be, I'm going to make a number up here. So if we're currently at 600,000 barrels a day, roll forward 5 years, we will not still be at 600,000 barrels a day. Therefore, it won't be that it's 620. It'll be whatever that number is plus 20. And that's just an example number. Don't quote me on it as a definitive answer there. But it's above the current decline, but it's not going to get us to above our current number today, because the decline is going to continue.
Senator French has a question.
And could you comment on the bullet point number three then?
If we can bring through the kind of projects that we think are possible, and I can get my production to flat to starting to grow over time, then we can start to get that flattened out. It is over time. The billion barrels isn't going to purely come from assets that I have interest in. That's going to require that bringing our 6.5 billion through, bringing through OCS, bringing through a lot of other stuff. It's not just going to come from the existing fields on the North Slope.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just so that the public understands, nothing that we do with respect to Alaska's production tax rate or even royalties have an effect if we get 6 miles or more offshore. Is that generally accurate?
Three miles,
something offshore.
3 miles. Senator Pasgavan, decisions that the state legislature can make is going to influence what can happen on state lands. You're all in a position to be able to also influence what happens from a federal perspective, but that's in a different role as influencing. BP's assets are all on state lands. So anything that we're doing to increase our level of activities, our level of production, is from state lands, and therefore the state's going to get the most benefit.
Thank you. Senator French, a quick follow-up.
Might be real quick. Quick question, quick answer. If you could just move one aspect of our tax structure, what would it be? What would be the one thing you'd change?
Senator French, through the chair, progressivity.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just
I just want to say something very, very quickly. And I just want to say, I think what Senator McGuire said was spot on. You know, we all want more production, but we, you know, our job up here is to make sure we're doing our due diligence and not pushing across the table billions and billions of dollars without ensuring that this is really what we need to do. So I would urge you within the next few days to get us information. Tell us what fields you're going to invest in. Tell us what projects, what developments, specifically how we move the needle by passing some sort of major tax break. That's the information I need. I can't speak for anybody else, but Senator McGuire was spot on when she said that.
Claire Fitzpatrick, I think we will come to the conclusion of this meeting. Damian Bilbao, but with particular reference to Claire, you know, I thank you very much for your aid to the state of Alaska. We wish you well in your new job over in London, and we look forward to working with Damian, and we also look forward to a 50-year future with BP in Alaska, given that Senate Resources is adjourned for today.